of the number.
How do you know that it's a small number?
When we look at just who we have and the readily available information, the kind of folks we have that we become aware of have retirement accounts that are paying or won the lottery or something else are a very small amount that we're aware of. There may be some we're not familiar with.
I don't know if this is accurate or not, but I've been told that about 30% of our current inmate population are sex offenders.
Chairman, that's correct, sir.
All right. Now, I don't have any scientific studies to prove this, but the sex offenders that I've dealt with in my work as a detective tend to be people, unlike a lot of criminals who rob banks and steal things, a lot of times they have assets. Do we have any analysis relevant to the assets that these individuals might have when they come into the
Chairman, we do not have a specific... we can try to find some information on that. Our experience with the sex offenders is, as you say, there is a proportion of them who actually are more stable in the community or have more resources in the community. We also, upon release, we also bill them higher than anyone else for the kind of treatment and services they go through. So we would want to really look at who we have and what kind of occupation they're able to return to and what kind of accounts they have. Part of our concern with this bill that we're trying to work on is the degree to which we have to go find additional investigation of their assets or their resources and what that would take us to do. So that's part of our effort around trying to target the group and figure out just what is readily knowable and what would we have to go review IRS records or something else to determine.
Okay, and my assumption would be that you'd do some kind of an asset search or some kind of investigation. The cost of that would be, I assume, born out of these resources, as opposed to general fund or some other.
Chairman, is yes. I mean, that is our assumption also. That I think what we're trying to make sure we manage is the number of those searches we do versus the amount we actually are able to recover, and we want to keep this a tightly focusing so we're coming out ahead on the...
But this might be the kind of thing, though, that if it became law enforcement officers, investigators, district attorneys who often are familiar with the individuals that they're arresting and prosecuting might know that they have assets, or at least had a strong reason to believe they have assets, might want to give some notice to the Department of Corrections or the court that you ought to look, you know, in this place or that place.
I would agree.
Yeah, okay. All right, any other questions? Concerns? Thank you very much. Steve, thank you. Always
thank
a pleasure.
You.
Steve, is the governor in town or not? He is in town? Okay.
I feel so blessed.
And Steve Dole, you're next. Signed up, you're here. Got here.
Not prepared.
You're not prepared?
Not.
I'm ready. Just kidding. Would you like to share your opinion about this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Dole. I'm president of Crime Victims United, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 183. I'll just make my comments brief. I think it's a laudable bill. I congratulate Senator Metzger and Senator Courtney on their effort. We at Crime Victims United, in accordance with the Oregon Section, Article 1, Section 15 of the Oregon Constitution, believe that anyone who commits a crime should be held fully and personally accountable and responsible for their crimes, and we think this bill extends that area of accountability and responsibility. While we believe that there are probably a narrow amount of cases or persons that this will affect, there are some notable cases, and I'm sure the chair would remember one of these out of Portland, and that is the Hessel case. So we all know that there are cases out there where people are and can be held accountable for their expenses while in the state institutions. Our only concern, and I voice this to Senator Metzger with this bill, is to make sure that while people are paying their way, for the people this applies to, they will be paying their way through the institutions, that the victims first be, that they be held accountable first for the victims' restitution and any compensatory monies that are owed to them. So that is our primary concern with the bill, and we want to make sure that happens. Also, I do have to say this, that we want to make sure that, you know, there's many families out there that have people who unfortunately become criminal within the family. We don't want this to affect those families, so that also is a concern. But we appreciate the bill, and we appreciate your time, and thanks for giving us the opportunity to testify.
All right, Mr. Dole, thank you for testifying. Any questions, Senator?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Steve, you may have started to answer my question, and I'm sorry, I'm really not familiar with the bill yet, really. And I was just concerned a little bit about the families. Now, I'm not trying to defend the criminal in this case, but I'm thinking of some family situation. It could be you're saying that this would take that into consideration.
Well, I think it will, at least the way I understand the bill. This is for the people who have, and I think the Hessel case is a good reflection of this.
They have the wherewithal to do it.
They have the wherewithal to do it. Of course, in that case, it's a little bit different because the family has more than the wherewithal to do it, too. But I just wouldn't want it to affect families that don't have that, don't have the...
That answers my question. And that may have been said earlier, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I didn't know the meeting.
Actually, it wasn't, but I do think it's an issue that, that we need to make sure, at least for the record, it's clear that it's not intended to detract from the collection of unitary assessment type monies or other kinds of victims assistance program, child support, and such on and so forth. So
that's my question.
That's right. Okay, good. Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Josh Markey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Courtney, members of the committee. My name is Josh Markey. I'm the district attorney from Astoria. I'm also president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Senate Bill 183 is a good idea. Let me give you, big on anecdotes because life is made up of a series of anecdotes. About 10 years ago, I prosecuted a man named Randy Boyd, who I convicted of criminally negligent homicide. He arranged for his wife to fall to her death in a, quote, rappelling accident in Central Oregon, and had taken out $450,000 life insurance on her before the accident. Although he was convicted, and although Oregon, like most states, has a slayer statute, which allows insurance companies to not pay for obvious reasons, life insurance proceeds to people who are feloniously responsible for causing the death of somebody, this particular out-of-state insurance company decided that it, quote, wasn't worth the litigation, and over my violent objection, ended up paying out almost $200,000 to Mr. Boyd. Judge Tickton, who heard the case, gave him what was then the toughest sentence he could for that crime, which was about 2.5 years in prison. And Mr. Boyd's inmate trust account at the Oregon State Penitentiary had over $192,000 in it. Not only was he the beneficiary of indigent defense, and a very fine indigent defense, which he didn't have to pay for, but while he was in prison, receiving the benefits of the taxpayers' largesse, he was richer than most of us probably in this room. There was no mechanism in place to collect that money. When Senator Metzger's office contacted me originally about this bill, I had some of the same concerns that Steve Dole has just mentioned, which is that, with all due respect to Scott and the Department of Corrections, in the line of where we want to see people get the money, victims are probably a little bit ahead of the state. And by the same token, we're not looking to decimate families and squeeze blood out of a rock. This simply provides for a better mechanism of something that's been in place for some time for the Department of Corrections to, and those fairly unusual cases, but nonetheless, they're ones that I think cause a lot of problems with the public when they see people who aren't filthy rich or certainly at least very well off, who are not required to not only not pay their indigent defense, but then are being given, and I'm not criticizing the Department of Corrections, but I went to the University of Oregon for 10 years to get my undergraduate and law degrees. It took me a long time because I was having so much fun. And frankly, the food is better at the Oregon State Penitentiary than it was at the U of O. But I'm not suggesting that they reduce the food quality. I'm just saying that there are benefits, and I think it's appropriate in some cases to allow Department of Corrections to be able to recover those costs. I'd be happy to answer any questions from the standpoint of a prosecutor.
Senator Duncan.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious. What was the nature of the crime, and he only got 2.5 years in prison, you said?
Criminally negligent homicide, Senator. It's not covered by Measure 11, and because of where it's classified on the grid, the presumptive sentence is 18 to 24 months in prison for killing somebody. May come before your committee. I think there's a bill. I think it's Representative Corcoran and former Representative Prozanski have a bill to enhance that. But yeah, I understand your concern. I felt the same way.
Yeah. It's terrible.
I believe in building prisons.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marquis, thanks for your testimony today. I want to ask you a question that arose when Mr. Taylor was before us about it, as the department would write rules to look at those who might fit this category without certainly wasting, which is certainly not our intent, bureaucratic time on those who are not fit this category. In your experience of prosecuting these types of cases, and in the period of discovery and all the way through the adjudication of the case, do you believe that in most cases that there would be sufficient information gathered during this whole period in which a notification, say, to the Department of Corrections could be placed, indicating that this is a case worth pursuing or not, so that a lot of groundwork wouldn't necessarily have to be done for someone coming into the penitentiary system?
Yes, Senator, for a couple reasons. We're talking about, you know, despite what people think, the number of percentage of people who actually go to prison for felonies is fairly small. And the ones who go to prison for long periods of time is even smaller. Those cases usually are the ones that the DA's office is most intensely involved in. Many of those cases also involve a pre-sentence investigation. And I'd love to see the old PSIs, before DOC got hit so hard, used to have a financial category. I don't think they do that anymore because of resources. But yes, we have a fairly good idea, and I don't think there's any problem in putting that onus on the prosecutor to some extent to notify. In the course of certainly any homicide trial, we become aware of generally what resources are available. And many of these people, quote, get indigent lawyer. I convicted a young man who is doing 90 months on an assault one, who's from a very prominent Portland family. He is 19 or 20 years old, and he's technically fit indigent, but clearly his family resources would allow him to probably repay some of those costs. So I think they could be identified, and I think the prosecutors and the police on the front end could help identify those kinds of people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Penn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dale Penn. I'm Marion County District Attorney, and I'm representing the District Attorneys Association on Senate Bill 183. We support the bill, and we would urge you to vote yes on the concept. I just add some comments to the testimony you've already seen. I think it's wise public policy. If there are resources there without impoverishing a family, that the state should recoup costs of care for someone who's institutionalized. And the bill tracks basically a procedure that's already in place for the Mental Health Division, and it simply adds the Department of Corrections. And in Sections 2 and Section 3 of the bill, you'll note that in both of those sections, the requirement is in drafting these rules that the agency take into account ability to pay. And it gives some criteria, but certainly in drafting the rules, I think all of those protections will be there. So this is a model that has worked in the mental health system, and it's simply expanding by public policy out to another institutional system, the Department of Corrections. So we believe it is a good idea. All it takes is one or two cases in the media where an inmate is recognized as having financial resources, and yet the taxpayers are having to clothe, feed, and pay for the care of this individual with tax dollars. And I think those kinds of cases, and we see them from time to time when they get media play, they diminish both the criminal justice system in the eyes of the public, but also government itself. And so this simply provides a mechanism so that if those resources are available, they can be collected to repay taxpayers for the cost. I would make one other note in relationship to the questions that have been asked. In cases, almost every defendant in a felony case has filled out an indigency qualification form. We do not have access to that information at the trial court level because it is determined to be confidential. And the court maintains confidentiality in most circumstances of that information. However, once the case is done, it seems to me that is a place to look, that financial information would be available. The court tries to take it into account and whether or not there should be some costs assessed against a person in the sentencing process, but it also could assist in this process if that financial information after conviction was available. The idea was is that if it was available to the prosecutor in some way, that may give us access to some privileged information. But I think after conviction, for this process, it is a whole different analysis. So that may be an option that could assist in this process for Department of Corrections.
You would suggest, I'm assuming, take an amendment to law to forward that form to the Department of Corrections?
Mr. Chair, that may be a way, and again, off the top of my head, I don't believe that presents problems, but certainly it's something we could explore with the Judicial Department, the Judicial Branch.
All right. Anyone else wishing? Senator Harper.
Question of the carrier. Does this apply to county jails?
No.
Although
they already have some authority in that regard. Maybe Mr. Taylor, if he would give you the expertise on that, which I do not have.
Well, counsel's got some response.
All right, okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the local county jails are already given statutory authority under 169.151 to get reimbursement for cost of care.
And Mr. Chair, the references in here refer consistently throughout to the Department of Corrections and throughout this bill, the dark language, so it is just specifically dedicated to that. There is something going on at the county level, as the good chair knows, but that's not what this bill is about.
Do we know what the experience is at the county jail level in terms of cost recovery?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I talked to county council in Multnomah County, in your county, regarding this. I think that the sense I got from her was that they are still, this is a fairly new statute. I think it was passed in 97, the bill, and then in 99 there were some amendments. I think they're still working out how the rules are going to work on this, and I asked her to send a packet of the rules that they're working on at the county level, as well as the laws that they've looked at as far as research in other states to see how it works at that level.
I do want to point out in my testimony, I was overwhelmed. We all received this information in our offices. They're locking up 195,000 people a year in the 35 county jails. At least those are the statistics that the county sheriffs brought in here a couple of few weeks ago. I still find that hard to believe. So I included that in my testimony simply as a statement to show you how much we do in this area of corrections already.
Okay. I wonder if it would help to put an amendment in the bill to ask that Department of Corrections have some access to the Department of Revenue confidential files and tax filings, to at least have those records made available to them for the purpose of at least establishing whether or not these people have assets. And I guess what I'm doing right now, because we run out of witnesses, and I'm trying to figure out if we're going to move the bill, what amendments need to be made to the bill to make it palatable and functional, too. It makes no sense to pass into law some verbiage that has no meaning behind it. So maybe we could put our thinking caps on and the mental health guy is
here.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Fred, Mr. Olson.
Okay. Your name is Fred? Is that right?
Yes.
You didn't sign up, Mr. Olson, but I'm glad you're here. You guys have some experience here, don't you?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chairman. Right. I'm Fred Olson from Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. I'm Institutional Revenue Manager there. And I apologize for not signing up. I didn't realize the list was gone, and when I came I would have been the first one, and I didn't think that was appropriate.
That's better, right.
Since I'm not here really to explain the bill, but we did want to appear because we were asked to come and point out that the bill or the system that we're talking about has been used at the Mental Health Division. We're actually, the current system that we're using in place now, right now, has been used for over 11 years. We've actually done it for a longer period under the general concept of this law, so it is correct to say longer periods also. At present, that allows us in the mental health area to collect something over 50% of the costs of operating the institution programs at mental health. The central concept of this law, one thing that I wanted to talk about, is that it, in our situation, and would work the same in corrections as I've seen the bill, I believe, but we establish first the liability of the individual. In other words, that means how much could they be charged for their cost of care. And then secondly, we go in and look at what are they able to pay. And so the emphasis, a lot of the emphasis that I need to give to you is that we're looking at that aspect of how much can they pay, because the costs would be enormous if they came out of an individual's pocketbook. And so as we do this, we look for needs upon release, and we also look for factors that are important to the individual as far as needs that they need day-to-day while they're in the institution. There can be a wide range of areas that would be recognized there. Now, one difference that we believe you would encounter in using this in the corrections arena is that we have access, in many cases at least, to insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, other types of third parties that reimburse for health care. Those programs generally have stipulations in them saying they will not pay in the other setting. Not to say universally they will not pay, but quite often they will not pay. Our law does include the power to establish a lien against real and personal property and to take action through garnishment or by issuing a demand letter to an authorized representative. This gives us tools to collect when we need to. However, the majority of our clients pay through voluntary means, and so these tools are not used except when we clearly would lose revenue and it's appropriate to collect that revenue. To give you an idea of how this works in an individual setting, present, the forensic program at Oregon State Hospital serves 385 of the total institution population of around 780 clients. Many of these clients are at our institutions after trial in criminal court cases where the verdict of guilty, except for mental illness, has been returned. These people are patients who are treated in our institution instead of receiving a sentence to the Department of Corrections. These patients probably have a little bit higher rate of us needing to use collection tools, often because they're resisting payment for one reason or another. That just seems to be a thing with the population. And well, often they do not have any means to pay. One case recently we pursued for quite some time, and we're fortunate to be able to garnish and receive $300,000. So it does show that occasionally you do have remarkable recoveries with the people. And of course, like I say, often they do not have assets, and we're not able to bill them for the cost of care, but we are able to follow them, their success, let's say, at getting assets and income. And should this picture change, we do have the adaptability to change our ability to pay at a later point in time while they're still in the institution. Do you have any questions?
Senator Courtney.
Yeah. How many patients are you talking about? How many patients are you talking about?
Well, the population that I have here, the 780, that was the number of people that's an ADP figure. So we're actually talking about a few more people than that.
Okay, and your 50% figure applies to that number?
To that number, and that's a figure across our entire program. That's not just the forensics, that's the entire system.
And the 700 is the entire system?
In the entire
system. So you're saying that 50% of their care is being paid for by the patient themselves?
It's being paid for either by the third parties or by the patients.
Okay.
Okay,
one more question, because I think Senator Metzger, you've heard Mr. Dole talk about the victim, and there's also the issue of the family, particularly when the children involved. When you use the word viable, how viable it is for them to make payment for their care and things, is viable including victims and from a priority standpoint and family and children, for example, of the particular patient? Do you understand my question?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Okay. One of the things that was brought, we go into in this discussion is, okay, we want to pay for the room and board, their care, however you want to describe that. But as Mr. Dole talked about, you have, in the case of these people, they've victimized someone, hurt them, and compensate them. Some of these people have families, young children. And, you know, they've got needs out there, too, and there's so much money. Do you consider those kind of factors in terms of how much money you'll take from them, or that those money goes there first, or is that another category or not? I'm trying to figure out where all that plays in, and you deciding how much money you're going to go after.
Our system has been patterned to look at factors that we feel we need to for our clients, and of course we try to recognize what the treatment professionals would want to say in terms of what would be a priority for an individual to some degree. And so if an issue came up with paying for something like a debt before they got in the institution or an obligation like that, we might well recognize that because that may be a large priority for the individual involved. We could certainly, under our current rules, in our current setting, yes, we could look at factors like that. Mm-hmm. I don't recall having a situation, though, that parallels having a victim involved. We could have had that, but I don't recall.
You don't have a victim for guilty except for mental illness? There aren't any victims out there for individuals who are in your facilities with that?
Not that I'm aware of where a decision has been made to reduce our reimbursement because of it. Now,
sure.
It could have happened, and I've just not made aware of it.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to find out. Maybe you answered the question and I didn't pick it up. But I still didn't think Senator Courtney was saying it too. I understand where it fits in if the person institutionalized has a family.
Uh-huh.
Small children or maybe getting ready for college and so forth, is that considered so that they can maintain their family at home?
We certainly try to get that kind of information, and we do what we feel is appropriate to consider it. The thing that we would not feel was appropriate if they were saying, we want money for our family, and then spending it in some entirely inappropriate way. See, I can understand that,
but let's assume they had college-age students to... Is using their money to send their children on to college, is that an acceptable use of that money, or would you say, no, we have priority on that over that?
I would say that if that situation was all laid out where everyone knew it was happening, it's in place and everything, that we would say, yes, that's an appropriate use of their money.
Okay.
So basically you're telling us you don't have families lined up saying, please give us the money, as opposed to taking it from us.
When I say I couldn't recall a case of one, I can't recall a case of the other.
You don't know of any devastated families out there that are losing out because of...
It's not impossible to conceive of that, though, certainly, under the way our...
All righty then. So, where are we? You mentioned third parties in terms of recovery. When you say third party, is that an insurance company, by chance?
Insurance companies, Medicare and Medicaid.
Okay. Medicare and Medicaid. So I don't know how available Medicare and Medicaid... third-party insurance would be available for inmates in the penitentiary, but I don't think you'd find that. Which raises a whole other question, though. If you do have inmates inside the institution who are covered by other health care, do we do any cost recovery in that area?
That's true, Mr. Chair. I'm glad you asked that question. I'm just thinking of military benefits health benefits for retired military. That would be a...
Sure. Mr. Taylor, sir.
And then I just want to... what I know to date, and we keep looking into all this, is we do not... inmates are not eligible for Medicaid, Medicare. I believe roughly 90% of the recovery at mental health is Medicaid and Medicare. We do not have that. When a person comes into us, their insurance doesn't cover those sorts of things, and we normally don't get to have the insurance. Wherever we find insurance for our medical services, we would try to access that if somebody's family was carrying that on them.
Right. So at least that's helpful in knowing then that we're probably not going to have a 50% cost recovery experience like mental health because those resources are not available to us. So.
Do I wish.
Anyway. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony, Mr. Olson. Sir?
Do we understand what this phrase was used, technical amendments? Do we understand what all that means? That phrase was used. Didn't someone say there were technical amendments or something?
Does someone have technical amendments to the bill? Or we're thinking it needs technical amendments, but we're not exactly sure what they are yet.
I thought somebody, was it either Steve Marks?
I think it was Steve Marks.
What's that all about?
Chairman Scott Taylor, Department of Corrections. When we came here today, we've had brief conversations with the Attorney General's office. We've had brief conversations about within the bill there's some reference to distraint warrants, that sort of stuff. And so what we thought we would be doing is trying to work up some of the issues around that in either in ongoing work session or side session and bring those amendments or those kind of changes that address those concerns people had, specifically with the targeted population we're talking about. We did not bring today technical amendments.
Thank you. I think there's a signal. Thank you.
Okay. How technical are these amendments, by the way? How technical are these amendments? I guess I want to get, as a chair, I want to kind of get a sense for whether this is a big deal or if there's just a couple of things they want to tweak or they need more time to look at it because they're not sure or...
Chairman, we do not believe they're big issues and they're not big obstacles. What we're just trying to do is make sure that what we end up with that we can carry out then, so it's not a...
So how much time do you think it'll take the governor's office and Department of Corrections to just kind of sort these things out and come back with their suggestions? A week?
Tremendous. I think what we want to make sure we get to talk to, that's why I wanted to hear the testimony. We want to talk to mental health a little more. We want to talk to the Attorney General, make sure we refine it. I think within a week, I would like 2 weeks, but we could probably pull the group together and put the language together.
All right. Let's shoot for, we'll reset this for a week, give you some incentive to kind of root these things out and then see where we are. And I'll leave it up to Senator Courtney to help motivate this thing. Senator Messer, too, of course. Absolutely.
Very motivated.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 183. We have two other issues. These, by the way, are some committee bills that are of my origin. They were thumped up in my head.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we have two measures for possible introduction through the committee, LC 3102 relating to domestic violence, LC 3065 relating to audits of internal affairs procedures by the Attorney General.
I move that we adopt LC, those LCs and make them, excuse me, I move, Mr. Chair, that LC 3065 and 3102 be adopted as committee bills and be so drafted and presented to the legislative body.
Senator Courtney moves that we adopt LC 3102 and LC 3065 as committee bills. Discussion? Any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Any other business to come before the committee? Hearing none. Thank you.